It pains me to say, but this is one of the few guys in Penn State's history that can actually shoot it a little better than me. Holds the freshman record for the most threes in a season. One three, literally one three ahead of me. And then top three all time in three-pointers made at Penn State. Today we got Pete Lisicki.
So here we go, Miles. That little tight in the chest, but that's fine.
Wow.
We'll see how you are when you hit your 30-year anniversary of your freshman year.
It's gone! Miles Tredd becomes the 38th player in the history of Nicolai basketball to go over 1,000 career points.
What's up, everybody? It's Miles Tredd, host of the Heat Check, presented by State Media. Super excited to have you guys on the show. We're going to have weekly episodes with former Penn State basketball players and other hoopers across the Big Ten. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. And don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. We really appreciate you guys' support. Enjoy the show.
College football tees, college basketball tees, whatever you need, Mercury has you covered with the best merch out there. We're talking about high-quality clothing, inexpensive, and the best part is I have a 15% discount for everybody who goes and gets some right now. Use the code below, hit the link in the description, and go get your merch now. Use the code to get 15% off. What are you waiting on? Go do it.
Welcome back to the newest episode of the Heat Check. It's your host, Miles Tredd. I got a very special guest on here today. It pains me to say, but this is one of the few guys in Penn State's history that can actually shoot it a little better than me. Holds the freshman record for the most threes in a season. One three, literally one three ahead of me. And then top three all time in three-pointers made at Penn State. Today we got Pete Lisicki. Pete, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fantastic. Happy Friday. It's good to speak with you, Miles. I can't remember if we ever shake in hands or not, but obviously I followed your career. And I said this to you when we first were chatting the other day. There's very few other shooters that I can speak to from Penn State. And you were a great shooter, fantastic shooter. But back to your records, when we talk about the numbers on these records, is it apples to apples? You say I'm third now. Well, how many games did these guys play in that are ahead of me?
Okay, right? Okay.
We have a lot to work out today, but maybe it's going to take more than just today.
So there's a couple asterisks in there.
Totally.
That's funny. That's awesome. So first and foremost, P, I heard you had a surprise for me. I'm very interested to know what you got for me today.
I don't want to say my age. I just had a birthday a few days ago.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. As you can see, my forehead is a little more of a five head nowadays from when I played. The days go by super slow. The years are flying by. I feel like I'm in my 20s still in so many ways. But when I look at like this mark on my eye, for the people that might watch this instead of just listening to it on a podcast, I don't know where that came from. What are these marks? You know, that again,
just popping up out of nowhere.
Yeah, I'm trying to hold it all together. I had my first surgery ever in my life. A month or so ago for a meniscus tear. All the things I've done with my body over the years, I never needed a surgery. I played pickleball for a few days on vacation and I tear my knee and need surgery. But for 30 years, I haven't seen what I'm about to show you. For 30 years, so since my freshman year in college, after my freshman year in college, I think you guys had this wonderful luxury. I have so much stuff from the season, shoes, socks, clothing, gear. And so friends and family that I'd see or classmates, I'd say, hey, take this t-shirt. I never wore it, or maybe I wore it and I don't need it here. I used to give gifts of gear. This thing I'm about to show you, the last time I wore this was the NIT in 1995. Wow. Let's see if it still fits.
Wow.
So my friend Steve Gober works in Major League Baseball now for 20 years or so. He's here for spring training. He just dropped this off. It was in his garage, so he probably hasn't worn it in all that time either. He'd probably say, yeah, thanks, Pete, but I'm not going to wear this. So here we go, Miles. That little tight in the chest, but that's fine.
Wow.
We'll see how you are when you hit your 30-year anniversary of your freshman year.
Hey, man, you're still kicking. I'm not a pickleball, I might have got you, but, you know, you still look great.
Thank you. I'm trying. I put some extra hair gel in today and, tried to shave a little bit, but still got the scruff that my wife likes on me. So I got to keep it.
So the vintage jacket brings back some memories of playing at Rec Hall. So
it does.
What's your opinion on Penn State playing more games in Rec Hall versus the BJC?
Well, look, when I was coming up in high school and I had my list of schools, Penn State was the one outlier in there that people would say, well, why Penn State? Penn State doesn't have a basketball tradition. At that time, had just joined the Big Ten. My other schools were Florida, Villanova, Duke, UCLA, Stanford. You know, so all these schools that had a bit more of a tradition and certainly had great places and venues to play in. And when I visited Penn State the first time, I think I was a sophomore, they were playing Miami. So Beaver Stadium is Beaver Stadium, but that's a football team. That's a football team. And across the street, though, was the big hole in the ground. The big hole in the ground was the Jordan Center.
Yeah.
And so what was being sold to me was, hey, being from Allentown, from Whitehall, so Matt Millen and Saquon Barkley's high school there in Eastern Pennsylvania. It's like, all right, it's right in our backyard. I hated Penn State growing up. Penn State and Notre Dame, the fans that had their, flags hanging out their house every weekend, it's like, enough people. And I was more of a pro sports fan when I was a kid. But again, Penn State, it's like, gosh, I don't want to hear about it. What's Penn State? But when I visited, that was my first real time, sophomore year, of seeing what the campus was like, seeing what the school was about. And certainly the guys on the team and the coaches were a big part of the sales pitch. But to see that hole in the ground for the Jordan Center was really impressive for me as a 15 and 16-year-old. And I thought, oh, they're building something that looks awesome, and the diagrams and everything. And here we are, fast forward 30 years or so. I don't want to age myself, but I think everybody can do the math. The Jordan Center now has 30 years of history or so. And we had some great experiences, great games, stories I could tell you of things that I really appreciated. But man, it's a tough place to fill up in central Pennsylvania when there's bad weather, when the students are out of class and are home for winter break. So it's so big that, when you compare it to Rec Hall, which I did play a year and some change of my career at Penn State, it's night and day. It's so different, so vastly different. And then to go on with the rest of my career, I played in various venues, not just in the Big Ten, but, we played our out-of-conference schedule. I played in the summertime in different events and for different teams. And then I played 11 years in Europe. I played in a lot of different places, some places that shouldn't be allowed to have basketball games played in them, especially in some of the smaller countries in Europe where it's not a wooden floor. They're not 10-foot rims and all the other things. Hit the ceiling with a jump shot. There's things that shouldn't happen. But Rec Hall still is by far the loudest place. When it's rocking and rolling and the fans are into it, because they're right next to your ear.
Yeah.
They're right on the sideline. You have to move their feet back to take the ball out of bounds. Maybe not anymore the way they rearranged it. It was the loudest place. I remember my teammate Jeremy Metzger was right next to me on the bench my freshman year, and he was yelling something in my ear that I wasn't looking at him. I didn't realize he was yelling in my ear, and I turned and said, whoa, what are you trying to say to me? I couldn't hear him. It was that loud. So for me, when they're playing more games in Rec Hall, look, I don't know if they can really fully say, oh, we're just dropping the Jordan Center. They're not just going to implode that place. They have concerts and everything else going on. But you know what? Things change. I don't know. I mean, maybe they make it more of a thing. I loved it. Looking back at it, what I didn't love was, okay, the locker room was from 1978 or so.
Yeah.
They had wood paneling. The smell in there was a little like, you're visiting somebody's house that was built 100 years ago. But the nostalgia of it, when you compare it to a modern arena, was, it was a home court advantage. And that, for that, I'm excited that they play more games there.
What's up, everybody? It's Miles Dredd. Are you one of those people who struggles to eat healthy every day? Especially for me, I'm on the go. I found something that's really helped me out. Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Wherever tomorrow takes you, be ready with pre-prepared, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved meals right to your door. You'll have over 35 different options a week to choose from, including keto, calorie smart, vegan, veggie, and more. With over 55 nutrition-packed add-ons, it'll help make your weekly meal planning even more delicious. Fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant quality meals that are ready to heat and eat wherever you are. Snacks, smoothies, and more. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing 6 to 18 meals per week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries at any time. No prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are 100% ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. Head to factormeals.com/heatcheck50 and use code heatcheck50 to get 50% off. That's code heatcheck50 at factormeals.com/heatcheck50 to get 50% off. What you waiting on? Let's go. Yeah, I mean, them playing at the playing the way that they did against Illinois, I don't think there's a way Coach Rhodes cannot lobby for at least playing two or three more.
For sure.
When they have like those winter break games or, you know, like one, it's a draw. Like that's something that we'll want, that people will want to come out and see. But those last games before Christmas time are tough. Like it's tough to get people out. And if you're playing a lower level, a lower conference team, you want fan, like you want a home court advantage, and you may get 5,000 people at the BJC, but the 5,000, yeah, that's all really you want to win.
Can we win? Can we
win?
Win?
And you want to win.
And I will say it in the Big Ten, especially. So talking about an Illinois game, I know the previous rec call, you know, return to rec games were out of conference schools, but when you're playing a team that is ranked, a team that you're a definitive underdog to, you're looking for any advantage you can get. And if you're home court, because it's winter break and you're playing Illinois, right? And we can't have the students like they normally would to try to get an atmosphere, to try to get, now, referees are human beings. They feel the sound. They feel the energy, the enthusiasm, the fire that can be in a stadium or an arena of fans. I mean, I was watching the Iowa State game against BYU the other night. And BYU was just controlling the game, controlling the game. They were just playing great basketball. And then Iowa State's fans, every whistle, even when it was obviously a foul against Iowa State. Oh, what was that?
Yep.
I don't care. All referees are human except for maybe Ted Valentine and a few others. they hear it. They feel it.
Yeah.
And they can be affected. And this is why you have momentum changes. This is why you have surges in a basketball game. Emotion is such a part of it. And when you have the fans just in your ear, you don't want to hear them except, again, for a few refs. Like, we knew if we were on the road, we wanted those refs that were annoying because they would make the call no matter whatever they thought was the call to go against the fans. So, yeah. To me, I love the idea. It's about these. It's about W's. Can we get wins? And I think it gives an advantage. And that means, you know, if they do play some games there, they look, we used to live in Hamilton Hall. We used to be right across the street from Rec Hall. It was easy just to walk over, right? So I know logistically, you guys are probably over in Nittany Apartments. You're over on the east side. It's not easy to get over, you know, get the managers to drive you in a bus over to the west side of campus. But, man, we were doing it there for a season. We were shuttling over because we were still in Hamilton Hall my sophomore year, and we were playing at the Jordan Center. So every day we had to be on time to be everybody on the bus that took us across there, unless you said, I'm going to get myself over there on my own. So, yeah, there's a lot to figure out, but I think they can do it. Because why? Wins.
All about wins.
Let's go get some wins, man.
So, speaking of winning, college basketball this season has been absolutely bananas. From Purdue reigning, bringing more dominance to the Big Ten, to Houston changing conferences and winning the conference, to UConn running through the Big East again. What do you see this season And what's your take on college basketball and the changing landscape of this season?
Well, I think the big changing landscape topic is the transfers. Obviously, the NIL stuff, and the dust is still settling on that Wild West scenario of who the heck knows what's going on.
Yeah.
What's the real money involved? Where is it really going to, you know, we're talking about a brand new economic landscape that there's all kinds of numbers being thrown out there. I think eventually the supply and demand and the real numbers are going to be different than what we're seeing lately.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of fantasies going on right now that I don't think will sustain themselves. But yes, you just rattled off three of the major favorites, I think, for the NCAA championship this year. And it's such a gauntlet because even though you did rattle off three teams that are very well coached, they obviously UConn just won it last year, right? Like
correct.
They look, every time I've watched them, they look as dominant as can be, but they've lost a few games, right? So when it comes to it, it's 18. Now it's like 27 year olds. Cause you guys are all staying in college a heck of a lot longer than I did. I got out of there. I got my records and I got out. I gotta go make some money. But anyway, now you can stay in college and make some money. I couldn't do that.
No.
Anyway, so you got these teams that, in the old days, like coming up, it was the Duke and UNLV and North Carolina. And these schools took all the McDonald's All-Americans. And so, like they had runs where Kansas, you know, these kind of blue bloods of college basketball. But now I'm all for it. I love the idea that we don't know from year to year who might be the dynasties that are getting started. But you got to have a great coach. I think you just rattled off three teams that, you know, they got the coaching. And then you have to build a culture where kids, first of all, are gravitated to out of high school. I know that school has a culture of good things, right? And part of the reasons I chose Penn State, you know, known for all kinds of good things that are not just about the basketball, right? The school itself, the program is run like a family that, you know, here you are, how many years difference. I don't want to pull that number out, but that you, to me, there's so many stories, even though there's so many years that have separated our graduation years, that we're brothers, right? Like I love that idea. And that was part of another thing that first time I visited Penn State for a football game, I remember being at the tavern with Coach Parkhill. And while we were at dinner, a few old ex-players came in and didn't even really care about me. They just wanted to see Coach. They just wanted to see you know, the people that were there. And to me, that family idea. So those cultures, Kelvin Sampson, you know, previously coached at Indiana, coached at Oklahoma, actually coached friends of mine that played at Oklahoma for him. And they love him. They would run through a wall for that guy. Danny Hurley, I mean, very quickly has built this culture at UConn that even though you have all these transfer things going on, you have to be able to say, we have a culture here that will want to make you stay here. Why? Well, here's the big thing. We're going to win. So it's kind of an easy formula to get to that the final result. But to get there, people have different opinions on how to do it. And I think it does come down to like real quality, not just saying, oh, I'm going to get the most amount of guys that can score. Well, that's not how you build a basketball team. You got to have good kids. Guys get hurt, right? And so all those teams you just mentioned briefly there, Miles, what happens if Purdue does lose Edie? You know, that's a big risk for them. I think for Houston, next man up. I think for UConn, next man up. I think for a few other schools that they do have depth. I think Purdue is really reliant on Edie. And that's going to be a tough thing for, you know, somebody who's partial to Big Ten teams. You know, when's the Big Ten going to finally win one? I don't think anybody else in the Big Ten really has a chance. Illinois is
probably the closest.
But they're not. I don't think they can win the national championship. It's such a gauntlet. Once you get to the dance, you have to just, as they say, survive in advance. And a lot of times it does take depth. And so I think the top five or six schools that come to mind, they have great coaching, they have culture, and they have depth. Okay. And, you know, I think a part of that is, they're building a culture that they're bringing these transfers. I mean, the kid that's at Tennessee that was at, North Dakota Connect or something like that? His variety of offensive firepower, that's the thing that stood out to me on him. It's not just one-dimensional like some people. I used to handle the ball in Europe, okay? I played point guard. People never knew that I had a lot of assists at Penn State, too. But anyway, back to your question.
You had a lot of turnovers too, though.
What's that?
You had a lot of turnovers too, though.
Oh, no. Come on. I'm very exact with my pinpoint accuracy passing. But my take on college basketball, I very much enjoy it. When I have time, my wife and my job and my three kids are always pulling at me for my free time, and that's wonderful. That's what I live for. But I do enjoy watching basketball, especially college basketball, because I love that we don't know who's going to be from game to game. You know, you can have such a dominant team, but it's not like the old days where there's no chance of a team going undefeated anymore. No way.
Right.
There's too much parity, and I think parity is great.
Right. So, switching over to the Big Ten a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I have my thoughts. What are your thoughts and expectations for Penn State in the Big Ten tournament? Do you believe in your heart of hearts that they have a chance to go to the NIT?
Oh, they have a chance, but what? They got to finish 500. I mean, that's usually, I know they've let teams in that aren't, but they got Maryland this Sunday, I think. Mm-hmm. That might get them to one game under 500.
Correct.
Yeah. I think they got to go on a little run here to make the NIT. You know, I think it's just a matter of making it to the 500 record. So it's probably winning against Maryland and then winning two in the Big Ten tournament. I think that's the quick formula if I'm doing my math. And mind you, I don't get paid to do these analyses, but that's just my math. You know, I do a little math once in a while. I hate it, though. Rather use a calculator. But the, you know, the team this year, I mean, first of all, I think they took advantage of this transfer rule. And they brought in a lot of guys that have at least a bit of a resume. Like they've played basketball. They've shown that they can play on a big stage. But trying to melt that all together is so tough. And I think that the coaching staff should be given a lot of credit for putting together a product this year that they've had a chance in a lot of games.
Right.
And they've won some games that arguably they shouldn't have. They've lost some games that they had. They had a number of games where they had a double-digit lead. And part of that is the depth and or the kind of the synergistic chemistry that is tough to keep, not only like throughout a season, but even just throughout a game. And, you know, there's certain players that I've seen take over in previous games where you're waiting for them to see an opportunity to come in the game, even though they've been on the bench a while, and maybe they were hoping for a bigger role in this season or this game. But, man, take advantage of this, especially the older upperclassmen. You're not going to have many more chances at this. You know, maybe they'll play somewhere after their college career is done. I always would say that when I was a senior. It's like, this is it, guys. Like, I don't care if you're feeling tired, sick, this and that. And so what I hope for them is that they see this. This is the end. They have so many upperclassmen. Go get it. It's right there for you to take. Don't have any more reasons or excuses in your mind why the season didn't go as I expected. I think they've had a heck of a season for all the circumstances and kind of the parameters that you're giving the coaching staff and all these players coming together. They've had a heck of a season. They've had me watching. So I won't watch if I don't think they have a chance. And because my time's valuable. But I do want to talk trash because here in my office, there's a Purdue guy. There's an Illinois guy. There's an Iowa guy. They always come to my office.
Do you live in Arizona?
Well, Arizona is a lot of transplants. So everybody's here from the cold. I just mentioned a bunch of crappy places to live. They all come here to be in the sun. So, yeah, I got to deal with these people talking trash about Penn State. So, yeah, just for pure egotistical reasons, you asked me what my expectations are. I'm hoping they beat Maryland this weekend. Do I think they can win two in the Big Ten tournament? Absolutely. They can beat anybody. I think they can beat anybody, but it's going to take every single person down to the last guy on the bench to believe and to just be positive and just say, I don't care. We're down 10. You can turn 10 points around anytime.
No question.
And it just takes momentum. It takes a little bit of, to me, it's a team game. Don't forget that. You're not going to carry it on your own shoulders. And if you got everybody on board, you can beat anybody. Are they going to win the Big Ten championship? Well, they're going to get tired. If they win the first two, it's going to be really tiring to win that third one and the fourth one. They got to win four, maybe, right? At least.
Maybe five.
Yeah, because the Big Ten's not like the Big 25. So they got to win a bunch of games.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm pulling for them. Give me something to watch is all I ask.
I think they're going to surprise some people. Like they play March basketball, in my opinion. the way that they run, they can make shots. And when they get hot, it's like, it's very tough to guard because their offense is so, they're just moving.
I think there's more structure than some of those Chambers teams that you might've been a part of. Yeah. But I agree. Like if they're clicking on offense, they can score a lot of points.
Yeah.
I think when they're struggling on offense, like with anybody, that affects your defense. And so that's where I know Coach Rhodes, he has in his history of being a defensive coach. So here we are at the end of the season. I'm hoping that these guys now are buying into the, hey, my man's over here. He's not a threat. I'm in a help position. You know, you see some guys getting hugged up throughout a possession. And if you can play team defense and if you can get hot, that's what March Madness is all about.
Like,
that's where St. Peter's comes out of nowhere. Florida Gulf Coast comes out of nowhere. These guys that can score, but then they kind of say, yeah, if we play five-man defense, we can beat anybody in one game, not necessarily get all the way to the
championship. That's all you need to do.
Yeah. That's the fun of March Madness. Yeah, for sure.
So speaking of March Madness, we're in March. Who are your sleepers, your Cinderellas?
Oh, gosh.
Pick two teams that you've seen, that you've heard about, that you're like, I'm excited to watch them in March. I think they can reach up
and grab. I live in Arizona. Okay. So by the time the East Coast games are getting finished, I'm just getting done with dinner. So, gosh, I mean, I watched the Pac-12 and I watched wherever St. Mary's and Gonzaga are.
WCC, yep.
Those teams in that league and whoever San Diego State is in. Where is that? BYU? BYU's got capable guys. So, again, I know the West Coast teams better than I know some of the East Coast teams. And I would say that my sleepers – I just mentioned a couple quick ones there. Will BYU win the national championship? I don't think so. But a team like that could make it to the Final Four. You know, there's been crazier stories in history. I think either Gonzaga or St. Mary's. Again, these teams come out of those smaller conferences, so to speak, not Power Five. And I definitely think they get underestimated. People know Gonzaga's name now. People know St. Mary's name. I think because BYU, obviously, you know, they have the whole dynamic with the Mormon missionaries and they're 25 years old. So when I was 25 years old, I was killing it in Europe, Miles. Killing it. These guys are in college and some of them have families. And it's like, well, when they come to work, like when I was coming to work in college, okay, not everybody was like this in college, but especially when I was overseas, it's your job. And I think for a team like BYU, you know, just the nature of how they have their school set up with the mission stuff, you know, these guys are usually older and it's the same for their football team. They're more mature. And so, again, just recently I finally watched a full game of theirs when they played Iowa State the other day. And they confirmed for me, like, hey, like, that's a tough team. If they're healthy, teams like that, I think there's, again, San Diego State. I watch New Mexico because they have Rick Pitino's son coaching. Yep. They got talent. Even kind of the middle of the road teams in that conference, like UNLV, like, they have talent. Mm-hmm. But to make it to the national championship, I mean, everybody knows University of Arizona could do it. Again, these West Coast teams, I don't know if any of them are going to win the national championship. You know who I thought was pretty good when I watched them? It was Washington State, surprisingly. They had guys that I thought, that guy's a pro. Like, they had a couple of guys I thought, that guy's tough. To win the national championship, it's probably coming from the three you mentioned.
Yeah.
I think Tennessee's up there. Creighton, I don't know. There's games where I watch them like, wow, they look great. And then there's other games like, where are they? I know. But basically, I think the three you mentioned, Tennessee, Iowa State, even though, again, Iowa State was struggling against BYU the whole game, they showed, like, even though they were struggling, when they turned it on, their defensive pressure was super tough and they could score. So, yeah, you kind of look for those simple parts of a basketball team. Can they play defense and can they score? Not brain science or rocket science, but
For me personally, I've watched a lot for some weird reason of Indiana State.
They got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right? Kareem spelled C-R-E-A-M, right?
I really think that that team has enough to go reach up and grab. I'm not saying they're a national championship.
Sweet 16, right? There's teams like, I agree. I've just caught a bit of their recent game.
Yeah.
I forget who, but there's teams like that, that again, in terms of Cinderella, yeah, like Florida Gulf Coast a few years back, like they, right. they could win a couple of games in the NCAA tournament. And yeah. I think that's back to that parity idea that we talked about earlier, that there's teams out there, they got talent and they get hot, just like Penn State is hopefully going to do, that they can beat anybody, but they can also get beat by anybody.
Correct.
And that's, yeah. that's the volatility of some of the Cinderella stories. And that's usually why by the time you get to the Final Four, you do have the teams with depth and good coaching. And they probably had to squeak out a couple of games along the way. So we'll see. We'll see who's, who's the Cinderella this year.
For our heat check segment today, Pete, we got some Mount Rushmores. Okay, we need to know. I got to pick your brain. Okay, we got six categories.
Okay.
I need to know your top four
six in each of these 24. Categories. All right, here we go.
And I'll give you mine.
Okay.
Number one, Penn State men's basketball players.
Oof. Well, all right. Look, we're going to exclude ourselves. All right. Just, okay. Now, should I give you mine first or are you going to give your first?
You can go ahead. You can go ahead.
Well, first of all, Jesse Arnell. Jesse Arnell, who just recently passed away, he's led Penn State to the only NCAA Final Four in history, 1954. He was the leading scorer when I was in school, and I got close to him, and I'm pretty sure he only played 3 years. So then this is way before any three-pointers. Yep. Jesse Arnell, who then became a successful lawyer in the Bay Area of California, I believe was a trustee, or again, he had such an accomplished career in life after graduation, Jesse Arnell. And if you don't know who Jesse Arnell is and you're a Penn State basketball fan, go look him up.
Yeah, like
he
better.
He's, to me, like premier on the Mount Rushmore.
Absolutely. Then,
because Calvin's always been very good to me as a friend and a classmate and teammate and roommate, Calvin Booth, to me, one, great guy. You know, so I count him as a friend before anything. But are you kidding me? I learned to not bother trying getting into the lane and getting a shot off my freshman year, first month. It's like him and John Amici, everything was sent out. They blocked everything. So I was like, why am I even bothering? Just get in there and then pass it out. Or fake pass.
Yeah.
So Calvin, again, going back to those records, he used to have the Big Ten career block shots record. Whoever broke it, supposedly, since, they played more games than him. He blocked everything. And that's how he made a little 10, 11-year career in the NBA. And now look at him, again, starting with a friendship, but also that he's a wonderful husband, wonderful father to four children. And then he's killing it as a GM, right?
Yeah.
NBA championship last year. And always humble and always grounded. And just if you get talking to Calvin, just what an analytical mind. And that we always knew that about him. But, you know, here we are X amount of years later. I won't say the number, but he's proven it. And I think that he's always been for me in a similar way. We've proven people wrong. You know, people that said he was this, that, or the other. Well, he's done it. So Calvin, Jesse, gosh, I don't know. This is tough. People are going to get offended by me.
I was about to say, so the reason I did this with top four, because you have to leave some people off.
Oh, I'm going to.
Okay.
It's fine. Well, and look, I mentioned his name, but I'm not putting him on the Rushmore because he's got too big of an ego. John Amici. Like, what an amazing, you know, people probably know who he is. He had his NBA career, but he is he's a doctor. He is a knight. He was knighted by the queen. Okay. Wow. So, you know, the things of accomplishments that outside of basketball, there's a different Mount Rushmore for that. Right. But
again,
for basketball, Calvin, I think Jesse Arnell is right there. You know, people don't say his name because, you know, the people that I've known who I'm about to say, he's not exactly like the easiest guy to get a hold of or talk to, but Frank Burkowski, I'm going to pull out. So longtime NBA player, played in the NBA finals with the Supersonics. I'm going to get a guy that just doesn't get enough cred, I think. And when I came to Penn State, like besides Bob Weiss, there were very few other Penn State NBA players. So I'm going to put out the brick man, Frank Borkowski. He might still be alive. I'm pretty sure he is. He was really close friends with Howie Long, apparently, the football player.
Yep.
And so Frank Borkowski is the godfather of one of Howie Long's sons, who I got to know here in Scottsdale because he used to play pickup basketball. Is his name Kyle, the one that played for the Bears?
Okay.
Offensive lineman. So anyway, going off on a tangent.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I talked with Howie Long's son, who he said, oh, my godfather's a Penn State basketball player. I said, ooh, Frank Borkowski. So,
wow.
All right, I give you three. Okay, fine. I mean, let's go more modern. And again, I do tend to lean towards if you have NBA on your resume, because, okay, I was a great college basketball player, but who cares?
Right.
If we're talking about the Rushmore, give me an NBA resume. And so I'm going to give it to Tim Frazier. Because I know right now he's struggling in some – I think he's playing for the team I played for in Paris. I think he's in France. And, man, like what – in spite of the Achilles injury, I remember watching him because I'm pretty sure DeChellis was his coach. And I was there visiting when they were having some practice. And all I saw was Tim go up and down the floor a few times. And the speed that he had reminded me of Allen Iverson. Okay. Not that he had the skills of Allen Iverson – but the speed of Allen Iverson. Then he was having a great season and tore his Achilles and then came back and still had a great senior year and then had a really nice NBA career. So there you go. And I know there's a lot of other guys, right? And even Tim Frazier is kind of like, well, he's older. But yeah, I mean, DJ Newbill, Tony Carr, Lamar Stevens.
Hey, you're taking all my answers.
Oh, sorry. I gave you my four. There you go.
So I'm going to keep it real quick. My four, it'd be Lamar Stevens, Taylor Battle. Mm-hmm. I love Tony Carr. I do. He only played two seasons. Mm-hmm. I love Jalen Pickett. Only played two seasons. So I'd have to give it to Calvin. And then for my fourth, I'm actually going to throw DJ Newbill in there.
Yeah, DJ was tough.
Yeah. In terms of sheer basketball, just I'm going to get a bucket. There's very few people that are better than DJ at that.
And look, you just named some guys. Obviously, Jalen's in the NBA. DJ's an NBA player. It's just, you know, would he have to wait and find a team that he fits on? And, you know, so I think he's playing in Japan, maybe. He's playing overseas somewhere.
Yeah.
Tony, I do try to keep up with these guys. And all you have to do is go on Eurobasket.com and look up Penn State X players, and you might get where they all are. But I do like your list, and I do like that you recognize, hey, some of us stay for 4 years, or you know, some of us go and get our degree and are fully licensed Penn State alums. But again, I think your list sounds great, and I don't have too many criticisms.
Then we can keep these next couple ones quick.
Yep.
Mount Rushmore of college basketball coaches.
Oh, coaches. I'll do it quick. John Wooden starts off with, right?
Yeah.
I'll say Patino. I saw him speak at the 5-star camp, so I have a – but you wonder about some of the stuff that's going on with some of his teams. Yeah. But I love what he did with Providence way back when Billy Donovan was his player.
Yep.
I remember watching those – you know, they were under underdogs all the way. Patino, Wooden, I don't know. I guess you got to go with Dean Smith for sure.
Yep.
And modern day, I don't know. I mean, I know Patino's still coaching. I can't say Knight, although, like, as a coach that I played against, he made adjustments. You knew you come out at a timeout or halftime. Oh, Indiana's beating us now. We thought we had them. Now they're beating us. And it was an adjustment from Bobby Knight. I don't know. I'll go with, I don't know, Bruce Parkhill.
Bruce Parkhill. There you go. There you go.
Keep it Penn State centric.
So mine are, I can only go about with coaches that I've seen and watched. I'm a huge, huge Jim Calhoun fan. I was a very huge fan of Jim Calhoun.
Oh, his record speaks for itself. Yeah.
I love Tom Izzo. Roy Williams, that North Carolina team in 08 when they won a national championship was probably my favorite college basketball team ever. And then, I mean, Coach Krzyzewski, in my opinion, is the GOAT.
Yeah, Coach K. Yeah, I mean, when you mention Krzyzewski, when you mention Calhoun, Roy Williams, but I also look at those guys and feel like, put them at a smaller school and see what they would do.
Okay.
Or, you know, not a blue blood, right?
Right.
You know, because I think Roy Williams had North Carolina, you know, because did he play there? Coach K obviously started at Army and then found his way to Duke, but that was where he was always, right?
Right.
And Duke had a little bit of history before he got there. Izzo, I think he's proven he knows basketball. He knows how to coach.
No.
But, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, there's coaches that have proven themselves at more than one place.
Right.
I think that's the Patino, that's the Bill Self's, that's the Kelvin Sampson's.
Okay.
But I'll still stick with Bruce Parkhill.
Okay. Shout out Coach Parkhill.
That's right.
NBA all-time players, your Mount Rushmore.
Oh, Jordan first.
Okay.
Jordan first. I think, too, like, when you talk about the game of basketball, it is always changing. The rules change.
Mm-hmm.
And the styles change. What was a foul when I played is no longer a foul. Or vice versa, right? There's things that are now a foul that used to not be a foul. But, yeah, I mean, I think Jordan, Bird, Magic Johnson, I'm kind of partial to the 80s and 90s because that's where I grew up. And then, gosh, I mean, LeBron is just an amazing story and what he's accomplished at the age. You know, talking about my pickleball injury in my knee, the things that he's doing with his body at his age, incredible.
Yeah.
But I'm leaving him off.
Okay.
Because, again, I think the one thing that I'll criticize about LeBron is how he has improved over the years. But, like, Jordan improved. Like, LeBron, I feel like there's certain things within a team that he has improved at. Like, his passing is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But he could even be better, right?
Yeah.
Like, I see sometimes he lags a play and an effort over the years. I remember a playoff series when he was with the Cavaliers. He just gave up. And so there's little things with LeBron I have criticisms. But I what an amazing story and amazing person and things he's accomplished. Who's my fourth, though? I don't know. Jeez.
I was going to say, if you're leaving LeBron off, I'm interested to hear this one.
Oscar Robertson, average triple-double.
There you go.
I mean, I think some of these older players don't get their due credit because it was a different game back then. But that doesn't mean if they weren't born today that they still wouldn't dominate.
Right.
And I think Oscar Robertson's a quick example. I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, like, you could not stop Kareem's hook shot. It was just impossible.
Right.
And he blocked everything and, you know, at his size, all the things that he could do. But let's hear yours and we'll keep moving.
I think for me, I like in my Mount Rushmore, you have to have changed the game. Like, you were game changer.
I like it.
Whether it was like historically the rules, how people dressed, how people played, like a bunch of different stuff. So I think Jordan is on there for sure. So is LeBron. I think you have to put Shaq on there. And a lot of people are going to give me crap for it. I got to put Wilt Chamberlain on there.
Oh, yeah. Wilt was close. Wilt was close in my mind. Like, he was – they changed the rules because of him, right?
The rules of the basketball
game. They wouldn't allow him to dunk.
The court.
Yeah.
Like, you changed the lines on the court because of you. Like, that's greatness in my
opinion. Yeah. He just was born out of his, the time.
No doubt.
I think if – look, for me to know that this guy was an amazing – like, his track and field stuff, if you look that up, to look at the – picture of him in the film Conan the Destroyer. He's standing there next to Andre the Giant or standing next to Arnold Schwarzenegger, and he dwarfs these two guys.
Yeah. Everybody used to think Andre the Giant was like the biggest person in the world.
He dwarfed these amazing, you know, mountains of men.
Yeah.
And that he could run, he could pass, he could rebound. He could make free throws. I think when he scored 100, he had like 30 some free throw makes.
Yeah.
I agree. I like Wilt. Your Shaq one, having played against him just once, and I have some other, you know, commonalities with Shaq. I love him. Like, you know, him and Barkley and Kenny Smith, they crack me up, and I like so much from a personality standpoint. And Shaq always turned it on when it came down to it. But again, like LeBron, he could have been a better free throw shooter. There was things you could tell, like, he didn't work on it in the offseason. And I think both of us are remiss that we don't have Kobe on there.
Yes, that one hurt me.
I was hoping you put Kobe on.
It did hurt me. Yeah. It's just when you dominate the game in such a way.
Yeah.
And people say, oh, I fear Jordan. No, people physically fear Shaquille.
He had to change
the rosters to be like, they needed an extra body. They just started drafting big guys.
You're right. I think in terms of the way he played, it changed how the game was played. But then, you know, towards the end of his career, it was this transition to the guys like him are really hard to incorporate into an NBA offense or defense because of the pick on the ball. And you're drawing him away from the basket because everybody's shooting threes now. Mm-hmm. And so the way Shaq played, I remember we played against him. I was on the national team for one summer. And so we played against the U.S. Olympic team, which was Shaq and all the other guys right after the first dream team. So maybe this was the second dream team. The first point of the game was Shaq dunking on our whole team. And I was on the bench at that point, but I just remember thinking, ooh, I felt it.
Yeah.
He was a special player.
You and I are both shooters. Who are your Mount Rushmore of shooters?
Oh gosh. Well, besides you and me, right?
Yeah, I mean, I know I'm on there, but it's okay. I get it.
I think I start with Reggie Miller.
Okay.
But, you know, growing up, I really liked Steph's dad. So Del Curry. And Dale Ellis. So these two guys, Reggie Miller, I'm not going to say Steph because I already said his dad, but obviously Steph is one of the most amazing shooters of all time, if not the most amazing. My fourth guy, you may not know, Andrew Toney from the Philadelphia 76ers. So look him up, the Boston Strangler, number 22, NBA champion, 1983, 76ers. Andrew Toney, again, as a kid, that was who I looked up to. The way he played and the way he shot. Yeah, he was tough. Let me hear yours. Let's go.
Steph Curry, 1A, 1B, and 1C.
Yeah, I know.
I know. Kyle Korver.
Yeah.
The way that he runs the floor and
I might be like Usain Bolt. If I knew on a fast break, I could go get an open three on the wing. You saw me fly up the because how did Pete get so fast? Oh, he knows that he might get a three. Kyle Korver used to do that. He'd fly up the court and get in the position.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to put Klay Thompson on there because I feel like he gets shadowed a lot or he gets put under Steph's shadow a lot.
Of course.
I feel like Klay could do what he does on somebody else's team too.
Incredible shooter. Incredible shooter.
And then lastly, I'm going to go old school. But I like Rip Hamilton.
Well, you mentioned Kobe, you mentioned Rip. These guys are roughly my vintage. And so I know Rip. He's my younger brother's age.
Yeah.
Incredible player. I think we're missing guys like Larry Bird. I mean, there's guys that in a three-point contest, I'm taking Bird. I'm taking Steph. Like these guys are.
I guess it was more so for me, like, who's a joy to watch. Larry Bird's form was not pretty whatsoever.
He had a weird.
Yeah,
he brought it back a little too far. But he, Ray Allen, another guy. It's again my vintage. Yeah, there's a lot of good shooters. I think we did all right.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think we're all right.
Yeah, and this is our opinion. People are going to get left off. If you don't like it,
it's going to happen. Sorry.
Come tell us.
You hop on the phone.
You tell us your opinion on it.
Yeah. I left my cell phone. So get out of
now
here.
Now we're going to transition out of basketball a little bit. Okay. Mount Rushmore of food genres, Italian, Mexican, Chinese, ooh, whatever. Who's your Mount Rushmore of food types?
Well, you're looking at me when I was 20 pounds less at Penn State, and I still fit into this. I like food. And anybody that knows me, if they visit here or if they're going to some city that I know, I'll know the restaurants. I'll know. I mean, I think my go-to is Italian. I lived in Italy a bunch of years, and my mom's half Italian, so she had a lot of Italian dishes. So Italian's pretty darn good, yeah. And that's what I'll start with. Having lived here in Phoenix now, not just the hole in the wall, but there's Mexican food that's so good.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's all the same ingredients somehow. Same with Italian a lot of times.
Yeah.
But if you're getting to real Italian food, it's not just pasta. It's not just tomato sauce.
Right.
And there's different regions of Italian food that it's vastly different.
Yeah.
Maybe more seafood, maybe more meat and potatoes. I do, because I'm also Slovak and Eastern European, I like Eastern European food. So this is more like meat and potatoes, goulash, pierogies, halushkis. what's another one? Oh, pagachals. You don't even know what words I'm saying right now, Miles, right?
Nope.
So again, we got Italian, we got Mexican, we got Eastern European, let's say Slovak food, Ukrainian food, Hungarian. And for my last one, I don't know, I'll go French. French has amazing flavors. It's just the portion size. When I played in Paris, I mentioned earlier that I think that's where Tim Frazier's playing now.
Yeah.
I always wanted more after they brought out my entree. It's like, do you have some more of this?
Yeah.
But the food, the flavor is super good. So there's my quick Rushmore for food genres.
Okay. So for mine, I would say Mexican for sure. I love barbecue.
Yeah. I'm all over it.
Yeah, I'm a barbecue guy. Breakfast food. I think this is something that people don't ever.
I'm breakfast for lunch, breakfast for dinner all the time.
I'm a breakfast for dinner guy. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to just say soul food. I guess you can kind of lump soul food and barbecue together, but I think they're different. I like soul food, you know, like my mom is a great cook. My dad can cook. My family has just been, you know, we have a lot of different cultures that kind of mesh together. And I'm a huge, huge fan of soul food for sure.
There's a few restaurants here in Phoenix that are kind of soul food restaurants. They're amazing.
Okay.
And having had teammates that would, you know, introduce me to things I never heard of before, I am familiar. But it's funny, you know, that's why I said Italian first, because that's the kind of food my mom would make first. Usually she'd make Italian stuff. So I think that comfort food idea of home, for a lot of people, that's on their Rushmore, right?
Right. Last one. Mount Rushmore of movies.
Oof. Oh, come on. All right. So I won't use two spots because I could, but I'll say Empire Strikes Back, which is the sequel to Star Wars. Uh-huh. I'm taking the kids, not tomorrow, but next week, to the Phoenix Symphony. We're going to see the original Star Wars film on the big screen, but the symphony is going to play the music that goes with the movie.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'll be dressed. I hope you appreciate this. I'm going to dress as Lando Calrissian. So that was Billy Dee Williams, one of the few. Yep. There's very few women in the Star Wars worlds and universe. There's very few black men, and Lando Calrissian is one of them. And one of my favorite characters was Lando.
That's awesome.
So yes, we're going to be dressed for that. So Empire Strikes Back, though, I'll take, because I count that better than Star Wars for its breadth and depth of storyline. I'll say Caddyshack for a comedy. Again, this is going back to it's golf. It's a lot of the comedians and actors of my kind of growing up. I'll say one that I tie to Penn State because we watched it all the time. And it makes me think of Jarrett Stevens. It makes me think of Calvin. It makes me think of Danny Earle, Jeremy Metzger. We used to watch this all the time because we had it on tape. So VHS, we used to plug it in and just hit play. It was Friday.
Friday.
So, I mean, we can quote Caddyshack and Friday all day long.
No doubt.
In our 3501 Nittany apartment.
3501. Shout out 3501.
So Empire Strikes Back, Caddyshack, Friday, and number four, let me try to think of one that's not sci-fi, that's not comedy, more drama. I don't know. I mean, what do I stop and watch if I see it on anytime? I don't know. You got to prep me better, Miles, so that I'm giving you some. I'm going to come back later and say, oh, I want to switch that out. My Mount Rushmore movies. I'll go with. I'm going to hate myself for saying whatever I'm going to say. I'll just go with what the kids like nowadays. Something like, I don't know, the original Willy Wonka. There you go.
Okay. Not bad. That's not bad. That's a good list.
Thank you.
I mean, there is one that is going to be on this list regardless. Anybody that knows me well enough, The Lion King is nice. The greatest movie.
Well, that's kind of in my Willy Wonka, like, hey, like, I can watch it anytime.
I've watched that movie. I could probably tell you the screenplay and the dialogue backwards.
Mm-hmm. I know the music that goes with every scene.
Yeah.
For every Star Wars original movie.
So The Lion King, I would say Goodfellas. Goodfellas is awesome.
Great movie, as Jared would say. Jared
great C. movie.
Great movie.
I'd probably have to throw in Avatar. First Avatar movie. That was...
I'm a huge sci-fi fan, so I stayed away from the sci-fis because I could just start listing all sci-fis.
Yeah.
But Avatar, like you said about players that changed, you know, the game, amazing with what he did with that. But the second one was I still haven't finished it.
Yeah. And then one movie that was just a real tearjerker for me was The Pursuit of Happiness. That one got me. I tried. It was like one of those movies where you're like, everybody tells you beforehand, oh, yes, that's an emotional movie, whatever, whatever. And I'm just like, I'll be fine. It's a movie.
I don't know what it is, but movies like that, and there's a few others, I find myself getting a tear forming. And I'm like, what the hell's wrong with me?
Yeah, gets me. Every time. Every time. Every time.
I like it.
Pete, thank you so much for hopping on. I appreciate you so much. You and I both know we're part of that Penn State basketball family. You know, I feel and I appreciate you so much for being somebody that I could call on and, you know, just advocate for me, but also just to do a simple favor, like hop on the podcast for me. So, again, shout out to you. This is awesome. I appreciate you so much.
My pleasure. And I'll look for my Heat Check T-shirt in the mail.
I got you.
I'll be sending you this one.
Please do. I don't know if it'll fit, but we'll make it work.
Thank you, Miles. Thanks, Keep Pete. In touch, man.
Yes, sir. What's up, everybody? Hope you enjoyed this episode of The Heat Check. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe so we can continue to have big-time guests and create great content for you guys. And if you haven't yet, check us out on social media in the links below. Really appreciate you guys' support. We'll see you next week.